Then bury them and burrow. Stan scratched his beard with his three-fingered hand.
What's the strategy, Hop?
Tell me it's better than marching up and knocking down the gates.
You don't think that would work? Hop said.
I think we'd be better off fortifying the base of the hill and starving them out.
Stan raised his eyes at Dante.
Humans eat, don't you?
Whenever we're not too busy killing our neighbors, Dante said.
Well, then that would be my vote.
I'm not talking about chopping down the doors.
Hop pointed at Dante.
He's a nethermancer. How long would it take you to knock them down?
Dante tipped his head to the side.
If I'm not interrupted.
A matter of seconds.
The gate is all they have, Hop said.
If they retreat to the houses, then we burn the houses.
Walt pushed his white hair away from his sun-lined forehead.
My clan will go if others go.
Why not try the siege? Stan said. They may do something dumb. Enough pressure cracks a stone.
Keller waved her hand.
My clan lives on the wind. I don't care about a few hundred fools cowering behind a wall.
Assault them, besiege them, ignore them. With no central authority to make the decision, the chiefs debated these options for more than an hour. Hop pressed them opportunistically, darting in to ask pointed questions or interrogate unfounded assumptions about the dangers of a frontal assault after the fortifications had been essentially nullified, swaying two more chieftains to pledge support for an aggressive attack. But that was the best he could do.
They can't hurt us from behind their wall, Keller summarized. If they come out to try, then they're no longer behind a wall. That's when we strike.
Hop stood.
Then the Broken Herons will watch the fort to make sure the Red Shirts do no harm while we wait. You know how to speak to me if you change your minds.
As if the chiefs had been waiting for a moment like this, they stood as one, breaking into groups of two or three, or wandering away from the circle of stones. Hop set off without a word.
I never thought the clans would let an enemy stay on their lands, Dante said. We could do this.
Don't you think I know that?
Hop said over his shoulder.
Then what now?
Like I said, we watch the hill.
Back at the camp, Dante found Morn to tell him he'd seen Orlan.
He seemed wrathful.
V died.
It sounds like the Nine Pines have seen battle.
It's what they do, Morn said, along with all the other things they do.
You're not upset?
Of course I am. It wasn't the clan's fault I left, except for the portion of the clan that is Orlan and V. But I don't want them to die for that. Not when they were fighting for their cousins' lives.
Dante nodded, falling silent. Perhaps Morn was right. Orlan had manipulated them without shame, but it had been an impersonal act, collateral damage in pursuit of a noble goal. Still, if Dante had been in Morn's place, he would have felt betrayed, furious, righteous. He might even have accepted news of V's death with something like a happy sense of justice served.
Hop relocated the clan to a pond a few miles from Burrell, rotating scouts in and out of the nearby hills.
Dante took his turns with neither joy nor complaint. He checked in with Callie twice over the following week, but the old man had no major news.
A few more border skirmishes, the further enlistment of troops in the far west.
And after some hard words towards and from Galador, both the Merchant League and the King had reached a détente. According to Callie's sources, the Lakelands had no intention of providing support to the King's armies, but showed no inclination to resist in any way, either. Callie congratulated Dante on that point, before cutting off the loon to field a message from a Norran chief. 8 days after the meeting,
A low horn blasted across the pond. Dante pulled in his fishing line and sprinted towards the sound. Other herons rushed down from the hills. The horn sounded again, rippling through the warm springtime air. At camp, the warriors strung bows, belted on swords, and strapped on leather breastplates and braces. "What's happening?" Dante said. A woman named Gwen tied her loose hair back into a tight bun.
"The clan of the Laughing Fox has surprised a troop of redshirts. The redshirts fought them off long enough to make a run. They're headed for the fort."
The clan was ready within minutes. Leaving behind their tents, blankets, spare shoes, and everything else except weapons and the small pouch of food, water, salt, and other small essentials which warriors carried at all times, they jogged east, bound for the Butte of Borrel. Four scouts sprinted ahead, bows in hand. Lyra jogged between Dante and Blaze. Her face was as calm as the pond they'd left behind. The scouts returned in minutes. The king's men were just beyond the next ridge, on the verge of reaching the slopes up to Borrel. Hop gritted his teeth and shouted his clan on. 40-odd warriors raced up the hill and spilled down the other side. In the shallow valley, a troop of some 50 men in red shirts marched up the base of the butte. The clan gained quickly until the enemy soldiers spotted them in the open grass. Faint shouts lofted from below as the red shirts broke into a jog, hampered by exhaustion and their wounded. The clan reached the bottom of the valley while the enemy was just a third of the way up to the safety of the wall. A high trumpet blared down from the fortress. Hop swore. Riders spilled from the open gates, followed by dozens of foot soldiers.
"We're too late," Hop yelled. "Get back up the hill, fast as you can."
Dante turned and retreated with his fellow warriors, several of whom snarled, frustrated by the lack of battle. He glanced over his shoulder, gathering up the nether in preparation for a fight. But the soldiers from the fort met those running up the hill and stopped to help them up to the cover of Borrel. When the clan reached the ridge, Hop paused to let them catch their breath and assess the enemy. A mile away, the swarm of red shirts clustered outside the wall and funneled through the gates. They jogged back to their lakeside camp. Hop dispatched scouts and spent several minutes exchanging loon messages with the other chiefs. Blaze went to the shore to towel off his sweat. He'd been bathing with some frequency lately. Shaving, too.
"Well, that was fun," he said when he returned, damp-haired. "I suppose it beats, maybe, dying?"
Dante leaned over at the waist to stretch his back and legs. "But now they've got 250 men instead of 200. I'd say our overall chances of maybe dying have shot right up."
"Let me ask you something. Do you care?"
"Do I care if I might die soon?"
"Yeah."
"A bit," Dante said, "in the sense that, yes, completely I care.
What are you, insane?"
He paused, mouth twisting, between a grin and a grimace.
"Wait. You're not in love, are you?"
Blaze flapped his hand. "That's not what I'm talking about. Does this feel real to you? Does it feel like a war? The kind of thing bards sing songs about?"
"Sure. I'm working on a song myself."
"Really?
I call it The Ballad of History's Greatest Sorcerer and His Homely Sidekick, Whose Name Was Unfortunately Lost to Time."
"Come on. Too long?" Blaze shook his head at the pond. It wasn't long until sunset, and yellow light poured in through the branches of the trees. Flies floated down to the water and disappeared in swift ripples of rising fish. Someone had lit a fire. Smoke and pan-fried fish drifted on the cool air.
"Maybe it'll sink in soon," Blaze said, "but right now we're standing by this pond. We're about to eat some fish. There'll be salt and white pepper, and whatever those spriggy little herbs are. We'll get up with the sun, and we'll fish and walk through the hills and come back to sleep."
"And we just got back from chasing a gang of Gascon soldiers until more mounted soldiers chased us off.
But now we're here, by this pond,
And it doesn't feel like 5 miles between us and those soldiers, Dante said. It feels more like 5,000.
Exactly, Blaze nodded.
No, he said. Feels like war to me. Blaze made an exasperated noise and wandered off to find Lyra. In truth, there were moments when it did feel like an idyllic dream, like one long voyage between streams and hills and mountains, with no pressing destination in sight. But those moments were few, compressed between endless thoughts of days to come, of fishing to feed the tribe so it could fight, of practicing intricate tricks with the Nether to keep himself sharp, of probing the earth to learn its language and raise walls to keep the enemy out. He tried to notice the light on the pond, but soon found himself thinking of the clans instead, and what he would do when it came time to knock the doors of Burl right off their hinges. He was right to think that way. The next day, Callie contacted him to pass along the latest rumor. An army had departed from the borders, not 30 miles to the west, hundreds strong. Dante told him to tell the other chiefs. Minutes later, Callie spoke to Hop instead. The chieftains had requested another meet. Think they're ready now? Hop grinned. Dante shook his head. The more I learn about Norrin, the less I know. At this point, it wouldn't surprise me if they suggested leaving the hills to the king and building a ladder to the moon. Hop sent a quarter of the clan as pickets to the west. At the hill, crowned by the seat of stones, the faces of the chiefs were hard and sober. Hop didn't say a word. He planted himself on one of the long stones, smiling like a fox with a gosling hanging from its mouth.
So, as far as I can tell, Stan said in a clear voice that quickly silenced the pockets of conversation, we're seeing their strategy emerge. It goes something like this. Capture the strongest point in the region, which they've done. Move in a force strong enough to hold it against any nearby clans, which they're doing right now. Once that's established, they hole up in their fortress to prevent counterattack while remaining able to deploy hundreds of troops at once to smash any clans in sight, pinning down the region and whittling our disorganized little bands into splinters. This lets them control a big old chunk of the border and keep their own land safe until their real armies take the field.
Smart, Walt said, weathered face crinkling in annoyance. Why can't Modigan be dumb about it instead? Would make our job a hell of a lot easier.
Orlan stood and gazed straight up at the clouds that had mounted over the last few hours.
If we don't want them to do this, we should stop them from doing so. If we don't stop them from doing so, we admit we want them to do this.
Kellis scowled.
It's not as simple as that.
I think it is.
Stan didn't so much as glance around the circle. None of the other chieftains moved either, but Dante could feel their assent, nonetheless. The Norrin had reached one of their mysterious, unspoken agreements. Stan turned to Dante.
How close do you have to be to bring down the doors? Within bowshot?
Thereabouts, Dante said. It's subtler work than just smashing them down. Call it 200 yards.
I assume you work best when you're not being punctured with arrows.
Unless I'm specifically working at bleeding, yes.
Then we attack under cover of night, and under the cover of a big wooden shield.
Stan took a look around the circle.
We must move today. Prepare as we march. If this new army reaches Burl before we do, we'll lose the whole region.
Several chiefs stood immediately and jogged away from the hilltop. Hop grinned and smacked Dante's back hard enough to stumble him.
You're sure you can do this?
Fortunately for our chances,
Hinges don't fight back.
Dante tugged the hem of his doublet to straighten it after his near fall.
If you can give me a minute, I'll give you the fort.
Hop smiled proudly, glancing at the other chieftains on his way down the hill. The Noran was proud of him, Dante realized, as well as being proud of his own canniness. Taking three humans into his clan must have been a terrible risk on some level, a gamble of whatever prestige he held with all the other clans. Blaze had fulfilled Hop's test by managing to only half-drown himself in the stream, yes, but there was no higher law holding Hop to his end of the bargain. Tame, Josen Joe, Aron, none of them had formed in the clouds to scowl down at the chieftain until he relented and took the three humans into his tribe. Hop was a man for whom pragmatism came before honor. He'd break his word without hesitation if he thought it would make for a better tomorrow. He'd seen something in the humans then, some use or potential that convinced him to roll the dice. Not only was that gamble about to pay off, it was about to do so in front of 15 other clans. The Broken Herons moved east, covering half the distance to Burrell before nightfall. Dante gazed at the stars from under his blankets. He'd been in enough fights, scrapes, skirmishes, and battles to forget more than one, but he'd never been part of a siege of this size, let alone served as its cornerstone. As terrifying as that thought was, it was thrilling, too, a breath of cool air. The wind between an albatross's feathers, the night-dewed grass beneath a tiger's paws, feared and fearless. Away through the brush, Lyra moaned.
Dante struck out with the nether, neatly slicing a twig from the tree above his bed.
He woke sluggish and thick-headed. He wished for tea.
The Broken Herons tramped east. They halted regularly to forage, rest, and wait for word from the scouts, but moved fast enough to encamp by mid-afternoon in a stream-fed valley some 2 miles southwest of Burrell. Several clans and some 300 warriors were already there, mending shields, sharpening blades, fishing, wrestling in a foreign, upright style where victory was achieved by flinging the opponent to the ground. After each throw, sweep, or trip, the downed warrior bounced to his feet, laughing or wryly determined. More than once, he asked his partner to walk him through the technique that had just introduced him to the ground. If any old rivalries lurked among the divergent clans, Dante didn't see them that day. Stan summoned Dante over at dusk to inspect the shield they'd rigged for him. It was more of a mobile wall than a shield, 7 feet tall and 10 feet wide, gently convex with 3 horizontal slits at his eye level. Leather handles had been nailed behind either flank, allowing for 2 warriors to carry it while Dante hid behind it. It smelled of fresh-cut wood, but had clearly been built by a craftsman whose nulla was woodwork. The planks sanded smooth and splinter-free, the viewing slits straight and perfectly parallel. Dante's doubts about the plan backed swiftly away. Scouts came and went as night settled on the hills. The last of the clans arrived under starlight, swelling their numbers past 700, outnumbering the men behind the wall 3-1. In a straightforward siege, the odds would be far from overwhelming. In one where the front door would be knocked to the ground within 2 minutes of first contact, one where the attacking size was larger not only in numbers, but in the tree-trunk-like mass of their individual warriors, too, it would not be an easy night for the Redshirts. A ripple spread through the camp. It was time to march. 700 pairs of feet flattened the grass of the hill. Scattered clouds dimmed the moonlight. Spears swayed over the high heads of the Noran. Nether danced between pebbles and twigs. They reached the rim and spilled into the waiting valley. The butte of Burrell rose from the darkness. The clans carried no banners. They sounded no horns. hunching along in loose formation through the breeze-ruffled grass. The warriors were nearly halfway up to the fort before the first trumpet sounded from above. Torches pricked up along the wall. Shouts tumbled down the slope. Blaze grinned. Think they've seen us? Either that, or they've spotted an alarmingly large rat in the kitchen, Dante said. Let's see how they feel about the one that's about to chew through their doors. If it turns out I can't, and they shoot me, don't tell Callie I was trying to plink off a hinge. Tell him I was trying to lift the whole wall over my head. You think that will make you sound smarter? Flaming arrows launched from along the wall, falling through a long arc before burying themselves in the ground. Their shafts burnt on, denoting range. The Norrin halted a few yards from the nearest. Atop the wall, arrowheads glittered in the torchlight. Silhouettes moved between the rounded merlins.
"Turn back or be slain!" a commander bellowed from up the hill.
Orlan strode up to the nearest arrow, yanked it from the ground, and broke it in his massive hands.
"Within an hour, every red shirt behind that wall will be dead. To avoid that fate, I advise leaping from the cliffs and taking your chances with the ground."
Norrin hollered from up and down the lines. The twang of 20 bows hummed through the night. Orlan turned his back and walked away. Seconds later, a forest of shafts planted itself in the ground where he'd stood. Hop loomed beside Dante.
"Ready for the big surprise?
I hope you've picked some strong men to hold that shield."
"I can vouch for Ko," said the chief. "We'll see how I do."
He beckoned Dante along the ranks to the giant wooden shield wall. A gigantic Norrin waited at one of the handles. He nodded at Dante. Hop grabbed hold of the other side and counted down. The pair hoisted it inches off the ground and shuffled forward. Dante's heart pulsed. He walked with them, his breath echoing from the close wooden wall. Through the three slits, his vision swayed with the pace of the two Norrin. Despite the claustrophobia of it all, at least he could still run, if it came down to it. In a siege of the Eastern Kingdom several hundred years ago, a sorcerer named Federic had had the brilliant idea of enclosing himself inside a wheeled platform of pure iron to protect him, as he set to the time-intensive work of blasting a large hole through the mass of enemy walls. Once he got into position, an ethermancer among the enemy forces had let Federic work for long enough to drill through 4 feet of stone, and then, with Federic's strength depleted and his attention diverted, the ethermancer knocked off one of Federic's wheels, trapping him in place, and then turned the ether to the heating of the iron enclosure. Within moments, Federic halted his attack. Within minutes, the entire battlefield smelled like sweet pork. Dante could at least be certain he wouldn't be cooked. Still, when the first flaming arrow rapped into the wall, he jerked back with a snarl.
"Did you think they wouldn't shoot?" Hop chuckled.
"Shut up and carry."
"Are those the last words you'd speak to your chief?"
Hop said, mock aghast. Another arrow smacked into the wall, several more right behind it. Dante cut his arm. Nether swirled from the grass, as if hungry for the tide of blood that would soon sweep from the wall. "This should be close enough." The two warriors set down the shield with an earthly thump. Dante leaned close to the slits. The doors stood within 200 yards. Closer yet would have been even better. The nether got clumsier the further away you sent it, and required proportionally more energy to manipulate, but he didn't want to open himself to sidelong fire from the turrets at either end of the wall. Arrows whacked into the shield and whumped into the earth. Dante shaped the nether between his hands and winged it towards the far-off doors. The gates were inward swinging, hinges hidden behind the doors themselves, unreachable.
unreachable to anything except a paper-thin blade of nether. It sluiced through the crack between the door and wall and cleaved through the thick iron. From his investigation with the mouse, he knew each door had four hinges. Four doors in all. One hinge down, 15 to go. Dante smiled. Something slammed into his back, pitching him into the shield. His left lower back felt hot and numb. He swore dully.
"Where did that come from?"
Hop shouted at Ko. Ko shook his head quickly, moving to put Dante between himself and the shield.
"Where are you going?" Dante said.
He turned. Wood clacked into the wood of the shield, jarring him. He craned his neck. When he saw it, his knees sagged, his vision swarming over with foamy white spots. An arrow stuck from just below his lower ribs. While he faced the fortress, he'd been shot in the back.
Chapter 20. He fell to his knees, head hot and fuzzy. A huge hand clamped his forearm, stopping him before he hit the ground. Hop shouted something Dante couldn't make out. As if he were rising from a pool of warm water, the fuzziness fell away, draining the spots from his eyes as it went. Downhill, two slim figures burst from the ranks of Norrin, Lyra and Blaze. They sprinted to their left, headed for the edge of the cliffs. Hop leaned into the straps, lifting the shield a couple inches from the ground. He began to move it backwards.
"What the hell are you doing?" Dante said. "Getting you out of here. Set down that shield. I have a job to do."
Hop leaned down to meet him, eye to eye, as if examining him for signs of sudden insanity.
"You've been shot."
Dante gestured toward the edge of the butte.
"And my best friend just ran off to slice the one who did it into little red ribbons. Right now I fear more for the shooter's safety than for my own. Now, are you going to break off this shaft, or am I going to knock down these gates with an arrow wobbling from my back?"
Hop shook his head in disbelief.
"Is your brain in your back too? What are you thinking?"
Hop grabbed hold of the arrow and broke it effortlessly. The pain finally hit, returning the swarm of white spots to Dante's sight. He half collapsed again, nether surged to his blood, dappling the damp grass. He brought a thread of shadows to his wound, just enough to tamp down the pain. He couldn't risk healing himself wholly. Not before he had the gates down. He willed himself to his feet. The spots faded. Hop kept the shield upright while Ko maneuvered tight behind Dante to serve as a Norrin shield. The pain was a dull burn in his back. It seemed to fuel the nether as potently as his blood. He slung another paper-thin blade through the hinges of the door. A third. A fourth. He leaned against the slits. The door held firm. Had he missed a hinge? Left one half-severed? He wasn't thinking straight. His mind was clouded by the denial of the wounded. As he'd sent the blades through the hinges, he could feel the shadows biting cleanly through the iron. But seconds later, he couldn't be certain. He summoned another handful of shadows. At the front of the wall, the door tilted, exposing torchlight behind it, and fell to the ground with a bang. Heartened by the rumbling cheers of 700 Norrin, Dante struck at the next door. Not the one next to the one he'd cut down. That doorway was already open. He could faint at any minute. He might not have time for all four doors. Instead, he hurled the next blade at the door directly behind the first. He felt it shear through the iron like a knife through stiff paper. A single scream echoed from the hallway between the gates. He cut the next hinges in a haze of pain and exhaustion. He threw the final knife of nether, guiding it to the last hinge, and found the door had already fallen. Norrin roared. Warriors surged up the slope, shields held above their heads. Arrows conked into the wood and slashed into flesh. Dante sagged. Hop grabbed him with one hand and held onto the giant shield with the other. Warriors poured around them.
By the time Hop set Dante down in the trampled grass back out of arrow range, the entire army of clansmen had run past. Uphill, metal clanged on metal. Men screamed and swore and laughed awful laughs. Dante's ears buzzed. He twisted around for a look at the arrow.
"What do you think?"
Hop said. His fists were wet with blood.
"That it's very dark."
Somehow, Dante found the torch stone in his pouch and blew it into life. He raised it to Ko, who watched in silence, accepting the gleaming stone. In the white light, the blood slipping around Dante's wound was as bright as coral. The snapped shaft jutted a hand's width from his back. Fighting off the urge to faint, he met Hop's eyes.
"Well, what are you waiting for? Pull it out."
"Of your back?
Why, do I have another one in my ass?"
"You will bleed. You might bleed until you've bled to death."
"I'm my own best shot. If I pass out now, I might not wake up. Now get this out of me, and we'll see which one of us is the fool."
Hop smiled tightly. "How long do you think you can keep giving your chieftain orders?"
"I won't know that till you make me stop."
Hop yanked. Dante screamed and doubled over, writhing. The white spots turned grey, then black. Hop was slapping him, shouting, his branded face so comically alarmed Dante chuckled, wincing at the lance of pain that followed. Were the shadows in his vision the waiting Netha, or an oncoming and lasting sleep? He groped for them, and they shivered like wind-struck leaves. Netha, cool and fluid, mocking and distant and hungry and indifferent. He brought it to his wound, but it was like shaping dry sand. Hop wiped the blood with a wet cloth. This fresh pain was icy, not fuzzy, and it jolted Dante halfway from his fog, centering him. He sat in the grass, down the hill, from a panic of screams and clangs. He smelled smoke, dry and spicy. A great white column rose from behind the wall. His hand was warm. It was pressed to his wound, which was bleeding quite a lot. His other hand was cold. Clumsily, ploddingly, he balmed the Netha to his wound. The heartbeat of pain eased to a stinging itch. Two figures ran in from the cliffs to his left. Dante tried to stand and fell to his knees. Hop drew his sword with a whisper of leather.
"Is he all right?"
Blaise's voice was strained.
"You're sitting up."
"More like falling sat," Dante said.
Lyra glanced upslope at the sound of a horn.
"We found the shooter."
"You did? What did he say?"
"Well, if I remember right," Blaise said, "it was something like, ah."
Lyra jerked her chin toward the cliffs.
"He leapt off."
"He leapt," Dante said.
"Did he make it down?"
"Bits of him sure did."
Blaze knelt down across from Dante. He glanced across the trampled fields, as if enemy legions might be hidden in the bent grass.
"You know what this means, don't you?" "Blaze, I was just shot."
He twisted to see his wound in the darkness. Blood glimmered, but the flow had ceased.
"I'm not sure I'm not still passed out and dreaming."
"It means you were betrayed."
"What are you talking about?"
"Set up.
Sold out. Hung out to dry. Betreasoned. Turned coat against."
Blaze pointed to the left and downslope.
"How else would they know to deploy a lone sniper? To specifically target you? We found his little camp over there, hidden in the grass."
Hop drew back his head.
"Who knew about this but the chiefs and our clans? Which of them would possibly sabotage the entire battle?"
"That's what I'm about to find out. Also, I should probably go help with that war thing up there."
"I'm staying with him until he's safe," Lyra said, standing beside Dante. "I still owe him."
Blaze hiked up his belt.
Leave me to fight a legion of redshirts by myself. Very loving.
If you need a hand, just ask one of the hundreds of Norrin warriors.
Blaze grinned and dashed uphill.
Lyra touched Dante's shoulder.
Are you all right?
Better than a minute ago.
Throughout the talk, he'd been weaving himself back together, stopping up squirting veins, bringing flesh back to flesh. It was more than muscle, skin, and fat. Something else had been punctured, too. He feared it was his kidney. He didn't allow himself to look too closely at what the Nether mended. He simply guided it from afar, bridging his torn matter back together, restoring what had been ruined to its natural form.
You should go up with the others.
She just laughed. I'm not interested in having this conversation again.
Hop's here.
Hop smiled his fox's smile.
And now that he's made sure his newest brother won't be the battle's first loss, he should join the fight before his other siblings start to wonder where he is.
The Norrin unfolded from his crouch and handed over the torch stone. He reached back to touch the great sword on his back and lumbered uphill. Fighting had broken out atop the wall, swords flashing in the torchlight. A body plunged off the side and didn't rise. The Norrin had flung open the remaining two doors and the half-wrecked gates, and the passage was clear of battle.
"Looks like they're kicking ass,"
Dante said. "Forts only work as long as the gates are closed." She peered at him in the light of the torch stone.
You could kill me right now, couldn't you? After breaking down a wall and saving yourself from a mortal wound, you could still kill me with a gesture.
He saw no point in lying.
Yes.
She gave him a strange smile, an ethereal thing, better meant for a fairy circle in a pitch-black wood.
It's a wonder all your type hasn't been burnt alive.
In Malin, we're kept as the attack dogs of the nobility. You can be killed for flashing the wrong talent at the wrong time.
He shifted, testing his wound. It pulled, but the pain was a faraway ache, more the memory of pain than something real.
Cassander isn't the type to brook threats to his power. If the Norrin territories fall, and Narashtefik follows, I expect we'll be forced to serve in Setevan, or be hanged from the highest branches.
He's a ways from the throne yet.
He'll move closer if he acquits himself in the field. Anyway, Mordigan hasn't exactly displayed a Menok-like patience and wisdom towards threats himself. Would be easy enough for an ambitious man to plant him in a grave.
Dante leaned forward onto his knees and found that he was able to stand.
Shall we join them?
Are you insane?
Lyra rushed to grab his arm.
10 minutes ago, you had an arrow through your back. Sit back down before you keel over, and I have to explain to Blaze why I'm holding another man in my arms.
Dante shrugged free. If we never fight except when we're in perfect health of mind and body, we'll never fight at all.
He didn't test himself yet by running. He could walk fine, if stiffly, but there was an alien weakness to his legs that was neither the exhaustion of overexertion nor the soreness of the day after. Bodies lay scattered in front of the gates, mostly human. Arrows jutted from the grass. A bow twanged and Dante jerked down his head so fast his teeth clacked. He could smell metallic blood and the hot, fetid belch of punctured guts. Cries and orders barked through the streets beyond the wall. He and Lyra drew their swords with the hiss of steel on leather. Blood tacked the floor of the hallway through the gates. Dante touched one of the severed hinges as he passed. Its edge was as sharp as scissors. Dozens of bodies lay beyond the second set of doors, human and Norrin alike. Most of the Norrin showed arrows in their chests and necks. Most of the humans had been gashed open by giant swords and axes. More than one had been beheaded or outright struck in half. Suddenly fearful he'd see Morn among the dead, Dante tried to catch a look at each face,
but the numbers were too many, the darkness too deep. Past the wall, a few dozen homes scattered the plateau. They were a mix of human and Norrin styles, some stone, some wood, some earthen, some boxy and squared, some round, others set flush into the sides of short rises. All had high-peaked roofs to keep off the snow. Several of the wooden ones crackled with flame, corpses sprawled in gardens. Down the street, a gang of goats trotted past, bawling in confusion. Off to the left, clan warriors shouted to some 20 of the king's men, demanding they lay down their arms. Dead ahead, a host of Norrin surrounded a large wooden structure that may have been a church, though Dante doubted that. Even city-bound Norrin worshipped with little organization, heading instead to the forests and hills for their rare rituals and official celebrations, and were busy hacking at the door with heavy axes. Others knelt, bows in hand, to exchange fire with red-shirted soldiers sniping from the upper floors. Dante broke into a jog. An arrow whisked past his head. He raised a bloody hand and knocked a hole through the archer's forehead. The man flew back from the window in a mist of blood. With a creak and a boom, the doors gave way. Norrin surged inside. Steel rang against steel. Dante hit the edge of the crowd and tried to force his way through. Hillocky shoulders bounced him back. He opened his mouth, then let it close without a word. Demanding passage based on his name or title wouldn't budge them an inch. These were Norrin clan warriors. They had no more use for the prestige of Narashtovik than they would for lace slippers. He pulled the nether to his fists and used it to shove men and women aside until he reached the door. Behind him, Lyra laughed in a way that might have been disapproving. Inside, Norrin and men battled between rows of benches, shouting carried from a stairwell to Dante's right. The voice was Orlan's. Dante pounded upstairs. The third floor opened to an A-frame room with bare rafters propping up the steeply pitched roof. 10 soldiers in red cloaks stood across the room with their hands up, swords at their feet. A step in front, a man with a tidy salt-and-pepper beard and several silver medals on his doublet faced Orlan, who held his gleaming sword high above his shoulder. Close to 20 Norrin crowded behind him. Dante recognized several members of the Nine Pines. With a lightning of his heart, he saw Morn was there too. Orlan's sword twitched toward the commander.
"Stay completely still, or I will make sure you are no longer capable of movement besides whatever parts of you the worms and ants carry away."
"What kind of man are you?"
The commander's face was a mixture of anger and fear.
"What kind of man strikes a—"
"Your tongue counts as you,"
Orlan shouted. Dante couldn't remember hearing the chief raise his voice before.
"Kneel!"
One of the Nine Pines leaned forward. "Orlan." Orlan whirled, his scarred face contorted like a wolf driven mad by its own wounds.
"Why would you think I want you to speak either? Does it look like I want anyone else to speak?"
The commander held his clenched fist out toward Orlan. "If this is how you honor your—" Orlan pivoted on his heels. His sword wheeled, its blade passed through the commander's neck without slowing down. The man's head tumbled across the floorboards. His body stayed upright, his arm lowering as slowly as a man falling asleep in a chair by the fire. Then he fell. A cut puppet. His men shouted in protest and fear. Dante wedged through the throng of Norrin.
"What the hell are you doing? He was surrendering."
"He moved," Orlan said.
"And if you look closely, you'll see he doesn't have a fucking sword."
Orlan smiled sickly.
"Who do you think set fire to those houses outside? It wasn't us. What do you think they're hoping to burn?"
Morn moved past Orlan to crouch beside the body of the dead commander. The red-shirted soldiers watched with stark expressions. Dante stood square on Orlan, boots scuffed behind him.
There's no excuse for war crimes.
Dante gestured to the unarmed soldiers. These men are prisoners.
Over their consciences for now, Orland said. Soon, of hell.
Morn unfolded the fist of the dead man. He blinked, then plucked something hidden in the man's hand.
I will tell you what Orlin is doing, Morn said. He is destroying the evidence of his crime.
He unfolded his hand. In his palm rested an earring, part silver, part bone. A tooth dangled from a silver chain.
Why did this human have this?
Orlin went still. Dante's heart went dark. It was you.
He was supposed to wait.
Orlin didn't turn.
What is happening in this room?
Morn said softly. Dante tried to force Orlin to meet his eyes.
Do I tell them, or do you?
I told them how to kill him.
Orlin swirled his chin toward Dante. They were supposed to wait for my signal. They must have deduced you were bringing down the gate.
Morn sat back on his haunches, the loon forgotten in his hand.
Why would you want Dante dead? He is the one who should want you dead. Unless that is why you want him dead.
Orlin laughed.
He's the reason V's dead, you traitorous coward. He's the one who touched the fire of war to the brush of our hills.
Morn's face flooded with horror.
You're the one who lured him into an attack on Gascon royalty. And you helped, too.
Morn vaulted to his feet and grabbed Orlin in a clinch. Orlin gasped, face white. One of the Nine Pine warriors shouted. Three others advanced, swords in hand.
Orlin staggered back, and then lowered himself to sit cross-legged on the floor. The bone handle of a knife projected from his heart, twitching with each beat.
I only regret I didn't get to see both sides burn,
Orlin said.
He frowned down at his hands, then slumped to the side. A terrible silence descended on the room. Dante backed up a step to stand beside Morn. Lyra followed. The clansman who'd shouted out swiveled his face at Morn, his loose black hair swinging below his chin. His words were barely audible over the patter of blood.
Why did you do that?
Morn lowered his hands to his sides.
He tried to kill my brother after blaming him for his own faults. He risked the lives of every Norrin here to settle a delusional score. And he'd already betrayed Dante, an ally, once before. Why do you think I left the clan in the first place?
The long-haired man exchanged glances with the other warriors of the Nine Pines. Dante reached for the nether. Lyra's hand drifted toward her sword. The clansman lowered himself to his knees.
I will follow you across the hills.
The other eight warriors of the clan in the room followed suit in both gesture and word. Dante gaped.
You're not going to kill him?
The long-haired warrior gave him a sly smile.
What would possess a clansman to kill his own chieftain?
Oh, no,
Morn said. No. You are loyal, thoughtful, but fearless to act on your conscience when it is stung. We all speculated why you had left the clan. If you did so out of honor to a man you barely knew, what kind of honor will you bring to the Nine Pines?
Morn bared his teeth.
Tragically, I can't accept. That is, I could, but at the same time I can't. I have since joined the clan of the Broken Heron.
The warrior stood and clapped Morn on the shoulder. Then we will see what your new chief has to say.
Perhaps it is time for the broken herons to come to the pines to roost.
Dante shook his head in disbelief. Behind him, a man coughed. The soldiers. He tapped Morn's arm.
Let's get these men outside. I mean, if that is in accordance with your wishes, my liege.
Morn groaned through his beard.
To the Nine Pine Warriors he said,
Please see they are unarmed.
The warriors removed the few weapons the soldiers still had and marched them downstairs, where a few more redshirts had decided to surrender rather than join the corpses draped over broken benches and splayed across the floor. Outside, the streets smelled like charred flesh. Lyra quickly found Blaze. The fighting was over. Hop had survived too. Keller hadn't. Stan had taken a spear in the gut and might not make it through the night. All told, 3/4 of the redshirts had died or were expected to, leaving 60-odd prisoners. Norren casualties amounted to just over 70, a tenth of their force. While a team of warriors set to work digging a mass grave, others reeled up pails from the wells and put out the fires still raging in 4 of the wooden houses. The king's soldiers watched this with sullen despair. Dante soon learned why. Once the first fire was out, 2 warriors went in to check for survivors. Their howls pierced the night. Inside, 12 Norren women lay dead. Some were burnt beyond recognition, but others showed staved-in skulls, the blood not yet clotted. All had splints on their broken shins. Dante didn't try to stop the Norren. The warriors ordered the prisoners out of the great hall, where they had been temporarily quartered, and marched them to the edge of the butte. Pairs of Norren warriors grabbed the red shirts and, one by one, flung them over the side of the cliff. Only one of the soldiers tried to run. He was cut down mid-stride. The others went without speeches or anger. Once it was finished, no one went down to check whether any of the men had survived. Dante went to Stan to treat the strategist's spear wound. Midway through the process, Dante passed out cold. He slept for 2 days, or so he was told when Blaze woke him up. He sat up hard, the wound in his back twinging.
2 days? What about that incoming army?
Blaze shook his head.
Camped about 10 miles west, say our scouts. Meanwhile, we just killed 2 of theirs a few minutes ago. Best guess is they'll arrive in force tomorrow afternoon.
What are we going to do? Are the gates still down?
Sorta.
So we're only sorta exposed to the swords of 1,000 soldiers. Blaze rolled his eyes.
You do remember what happened, don't you? That thing where you sliced the hinges straight in half, rendering them totally useless as hinges? One of the Norren smiths is working on some new ones, but with as little time as we've got, they're not going to be half as strong.
Dante swung his legs out of bed. A bed in a room he didn't recognize. His legs were shaky, but his bladder demanded he put them to use. Blaze pointed at the privy and hung around outside while Dante made its acquaintance.
So, did Morn really stab Orlan in the heart?
Blaze said through the door.
Assuming Orlan had one. Hop released him from the Broken Herons, you know. He's in charge of the whole Nine Pines. Is that clan very wise, or very dumb?
I think Norren spend a lot of time thinking, Dante said. If they've already worked out exactly what they want from a leader, they can choose a new one in a snap.
Morn actually begged Hop not to let him go. Hop just smiled that dog smile of his. I think he might be evil.
Considering we're still members of his clan, I hope he uses that evil for good.
Dante finished up and stepped back into the hall.
Are you all right? Blaze said. Judging by the smell, you've died, and I'm talking to a ghost.
Dante brushed past him. Are you just now learning what toilets are for?
If I had any lingering doubts, being forced to climb up one cleared those right up.
Well, let Lyra and Morn know I'm up and around, if they care. I'm going to get a hold of Callie.
Blaze headed outside. Dante returned to his room, found his loon, and clicked it over to Callie. Instead of Callie's ragged voice, he heard the pregnant nothing that told him Callie was already speaking to someone else. 5 minutes later, he heard that same eerie non-sound. 10 minutes after that, there was no noise at all. Callie's loon was dead or shut down. Dante dressed, ate, wandered outside. Mid-afternoon sun painted the plateau in warm yellow light, tempered by a winding breeze that still smelled slightly of ash and charred fat. Hammers rang on wood and metal. Norren were thick in the streets, pulling down wooden houses and hauling the planks to a fresh palisade in the throes of construction behind the main wall. Dante recognized several members of the Herons, Nine Pines, and the other clans he'd recently fought beside, but he found himself wandering away from their labor to the east end of the butte. It was just a couple hundred yards from the center of the village, but it felt as isolated as his last 2 days of dreams. He stopped at the cliffs where the king's soldiers had been chucked to their deaths. He'd been drawn here, called by a voice too deep to hear. The smell was as far away as the cries of the hawks. Not too bad, just yet. That tolerable lull between the knifing stink of fresh guts and the lung-clogging reek of rotting ones. Far below, blackbirds hopped among the bodies, pecking eyes and tongues. Shadows flitted between broken fingers and teased the cracks in skulls. An unseen pressure pulled on Dante's collar, drawing him closer to the stark edge. He backed away, crossed the village to the disabled gates, and walked down the slope to where it met the valley floor. Within an hour, he stood before the scree of stones at the foot of the cliffs, corpses broken among the rocks like fat and fleshy eggs. Flies buzzed in schools. Birds squawked and hopped from dinner to dinner. But there was more than birds and flies among the swollen dead. There was Netha, too, lurking in half-seen pools that dissolved as soon as he looked at them straight on, sweating from the men's pores and crow-pecked sockets. But it wasn't only escaping from the bodies to the ground. It was rising from the ground to the bodies, too, as if the violence of their landing had cracked a vein in the earth, as if the dirt had been waiting to reclaim the flesh that had been born from it. In an instant his understanding shifted as roughly as thunder and as radically as a landslide. Moving the earth wasn't about speaking to the earth. It was about finding the death in the earth, finding the death and making it move. Move the death, move the earth. Blood lay maroon and drying on the rocks and broken limbs. It wasn't hard to follow into the soil. He simply followed the nether, the unstable streams of shadows waiting below the surface. He grabbed hold of them and yanked. Stone scraped and groaned. A chasm V'd apart, 4 feet long and 2 feet wide. Crows shrieked and took flight. A shattered body tumbled into the short abyss, landing with a wet crunch. Its feet jutted above the parted rocks. Dante skipped back a step, then laughed at his own skittishness. Dust sifted onto the corpses and stones. He repeated this on a smaller scale, parting the dirt into furrows fit for planting potatoes. Moving the nether and the earth with it taxed his strength at a fraction of what it would cost to muscle aside the earth itself. Were Aron's shadows acting as a lever? A net knit through the tumble of earth and rock that, when tugged, exerted its power over everything within its weave.
The weakness in his legs and the faint pain in his back stopped him from running all the way back to Burrell. It was late afternoon. After confirming with Hop the Gascon army was still encamped 10 miles to